You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, and Kelvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, the maps have changed in Wisconsin. If you're not sure who is now representing you or who is going to be on your ballot, you can find out everything you need at myvote.wi.gov. You can also check out Civic Media's new Wisconsin Legislative Voter Guide, and you can find that at civicmedia.us/voter-guide. And just as a side note, there will be a constitutional, yet another constitutional amendment on the ballot on November 5th. We are recommending that you vote no. Just going to put that out there.
There you go.
Honored and excited to have our next guest join us. Alexander Vindman is a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel. He received a Purple Heart while fighting in Iraq in 2004. His testimony was very prominent in the first impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. Alexander Vindman, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Jane. Always good to be on with the Wisconsin community. Last trip out was a little while ago, so I'm overdue for a trip out to the greater Milwaukee area.
Hey, come, let us know when you're coming. We'll take you out for a night on the town. Absolutely. Alexander, for people who are not familiar with your story, you were born in Ukraine when it was still part of the Soviet Union. Your family emigrated to the U.S. You joined the military very early. As I mentioned, you achieved the rank of Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Army. You're a Purple Heart recipient. You fought on behalf of our country, and then served on the National Security Council under former President Donald Trump. And when I was reading up on you and in preparation for this, I noticed that your first inkling that something wasn't exactly right was at an earlier meeting with Rick Perry, who was the Secretary of Energy at the time, and also an ambassador, the gentleman who owned all those hotels. And there was an ask that came up before the call to Vladimir Zelensky. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Sure. I came to the U.S. first of all when I was 3.5 years old, and kind of so basically just about not quite born, but certainly raised, and then joined at 22, military career that lasted 20 years, rising to serving on the White House of the National Security Council. So pretty awesome run that ended relatively abruptly when I reported Donald Trump's corruption, resulting in the first impeachment, you know, targeted retaliation. So he stole my promotion to colonel and so forth. But that all started really very, very late in my career, a year into my stint on the National Security Council, when we were facing the 2020 election and Donald Trump wanted to tip the scales in his favor. So like a gangster, he looked for any and all means, including extortion, to try to advance his scheme. And I saw this scheme kind of unfold. The famous call occurred on July 25th, but I saw the scheme unfold over the course of months before that. You know, the first thing was the ambassador, career public servant, just like myself, that was assigned to Ukraine was fired in the late March, early April timeframe. And, you know, we started seeing this whole scheme unfold, and characters like Rudy Giuliani emerge as key perpetrators. Don Jr., actually, Donald Trump's son, was the critical factor in getting Masha Yovanovitch fired, because he tweeted about her being a bad actor when she had nothing but U.S. national security interest in play. By the time we get to this call that you're referring to, I want to say it was July 10th, 2019, it was really, really quite well developed. The U.S. had held up about $400 million in security assistance to Ukraine while Ukraine was fighting Russia. The war started years before in 2014, and Donald Trump put the squeeze on Ukraine to be able to get them to deliver this investigation. And in this meeting that you're referring to, Gordon Sondland, a political appointee selected by Donald Trump, said, hey, this is what Ukrainians need to deliver in order to get the money, in order to get this meeting. And he did this to the Ukrainian National Security Advisor in this meeting. So that was the first time I basically went on the record. I said, we're not going to be party to this. I was arguing with this ambassador that we're not going to engage in this scheme that goes against U.S. national security interests.
Did he genuinely believe that that was an okay thing to do? Did this ambassador actually think that this is how business is done? This is how countries conduct diplomacy? Or did you think he knew that this was wrong? Because from what I read, it was John Bolton was there, and he once the ambassador said that, John Bolton is like, "Yep, this meeting's over."
Yeah. So I would say that this was a bit of a cowboy operation. I would actually, strangely enough, say that the ambassador thought that he was doing the right thing and was willing to take any means to do it. He was actually a big supporter of Ukraine, and he thought that delivering this investigation would get Trump to lift this restriction on money that Congress had directed to Ukraine. But he was also one of those politically appointed, not professional career public servants that wasn't steeped in normal diplomatic affairs and how things are supposed to work, and was actually probably morally flexible because this was a Trump appointed ambassador. So they take on the character, folks that he selects in that political class take on his characteristics, have his, view of the world. And, this guy was willing to do that, was willing to advance the scheme because he was directed by the chief of staff of the president of the United States to do this in order to move the relationship along the way Trump wanted it. So corruption was kind of permeating all of the White House and much of the government, at least at that political level, based on Donald Trump.
If you're just joining us, Alexander Vindman is our guest. He's a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel. He's a Purple Heart recipient. He was a prominent witness in the first impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump when Donald Trump essentially called Alexander Vindman and said, yes, we'll give you the aid that's already been approved for you to get, but you need to start an investigation into Joe Biden's son before the election so they could try and stir up some dirt on that. Is that accurate?
That's quite accurate. So at this point, you have to remember that Biden announced his candidacy for the 2020 election sometime in May timeframe. Before that, the Trump campaign team was looking for any ways they could tip the election in their favor. In the early days, Biden looked quite weak. He really didn't hit a stride until the next year in the South Carolina primaries. He looked vulnerable. And what Donald Trump kind of sussed out with his team is that if they just announced, the Ukrainians announced an investigation into Biden that could derail the whole election and really tip 2020 in his favor. And he had his team of Rudy Giuliani, Trump Jr., these characters that had ties to Ukraine, some of them have now been rehabilitated, like Lev Parnas, play a critical role, and cooked up this scheme that people should understand had nothing to do with U.S. national security. It had nothing to do with investigating, legitimate wrongdoing, corruption. That would occur in official channels. He would have done this by having the Department of Justice reach out to the Ukrainians and launch pursue a legitimate investigation. This was all about tainting Biden with any means possible, any means necessary. And Trump carried that through, not just that first impeachment, but he obviously tried to steal the election in with the insurrection on January 6, 2021. And he continues to cast a shadow over the way our elections are conducted today. So this is, he's an old dog that doesn't know new tricks. It's the same thing he was doing back then carries through to today.
I mean, he still brings the laptop up to this day and other of his close best people. Yeah. It sort of goes along with the first part of the discussion. When they come to you and say something that from your point of view, your training, what you know is protocol, when they say, we want you to do an investigation, is it just as simple, no, I can't do that. I won't do that. You need to do this and this if you'd like that, but I will certainly not do it. Or is it like a, I would feel dumbfounded by that request, but you have far more training than I do. So I just imagine you were like, no, I will not.
So my career was kind of steeped in the history, the national security of our relationship with the entire region. I was actually responsible for writing the strategy for Russia for the Pentagon. That's why I made it over to the White House. They wanted me to work, how do we contend with Russia as an adversary? So I knew this was very, very far afield from what the U.S. the government had put together, that the president actually had signed on with his national security strategy, that we were supposed to be meeting the challenge of Russia as increasingly aggressive. So when the scheme cooked up, it was not even remotely aligned with anything that the government had been doing to that point, that everybody up and down the chain of professionals from the national security to the Department of Defense to the Secretary of State, it was so far afield that my reaction was visceral. I was like, we will not be a party to this. And then I proceeded to report that scheme to the oversight bodies in the White House in classified channels, was these attorneys that had had that role, and said that this is not something that we're going to take be a party to. And they kept moving on in their own direction, actually. That first report in July didn't stop them. That second report, July 25th, didn't stop them. It really carried all the way through September until the House started their investigation. They started their impeachment inquiry. That's what got them.
We're going to continue our conversation with Alexander Vindman, retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army and a major witness in Donald Trump's first impeachment trial. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin B. on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, call, text, same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Honored to have our next guest still with us for another segment. Alexander Vindman is a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel, a Purple Heart recipient he received while fighting in Iraq, and of course played a prominent role in the first impeachment trial of Donald Trump, when Trump essentially tried to lean on the Ukrainian government to manufacture an investigation into the Bidens to give him an edge heading into the 2020 election. Alexander, let's talk about Donald Trump's claims that he's going to call Vladimir Putin even before he's inaugurated, should he get reelected, and the war is just going to end.
Yeah, well, it turns out that he's had 7 calls with Vladimir Putin, as reported by Bob Woodward. And those calls started before the war started. So either Donald Trump was complicit in knowing that war was coming and didn't prevent it then, and has had no effect on the war starting in February 2022, or moderating the horrific, barbaric attacks on civilians that Putin's been conducting for the entirety of the 2.5 years. So it's really kind of comical at this point. for Trump to get any consideration for being able to end this war, because he had 4 years of war when he was in office from 2016 to 2020. There was already a hot war. And certainly Trump was sending signals to Putin that this was okay. A larger war, a full-scale war was okay, and that Putin should, you know, could feel encouraged in launching this war because there would be no consequences, because Trump would always be in his corner no matter what. Those seven calls kind of illustrate that. So it is absolutely absurd to think that the right person to manage a very, very dangerous conflict between Russia and Ukraine in Europe is Donald Trump. He's mismanaged it when he was in office. He's incited full-scale war afterwards. He's just lying about this. And if anything, he would be far more dangerous because he's chaos, because he's not respected. He is somebody that's likely to encourage Putin to be increasingly aggressive. And this is the recipe for spillover. We do not need chaos. We need stability. We need dependability. We need a steady hand. We need somebody that's respected. Kamala Harris has that. And Trump does not. Trump is chaos and recipe for disaster.
And he's a Putin fanboy. We played a clip yesterday from the former Prime Minister of Australia, who essentially said when we would be in meetings and Donald Trump would meet Vladimir Putin, it was like a 12-year-old meeting the star football player on the high school team. That's not a healthy, that would not be good for any of us.
Look, I need to somehow underscore that people shouldn't believe the nice sounding line that Trump could end this war. He can't. The Russians would not would disregard him. The Ukrainians would fight on because it's their country. They're just not going to let it go. The Europeans have been there in a bigger way than the U.S. Actually, they put in probably almost twice as much as we have in supporting Ukraine. They're not going to go away just because the U.S. backs off. But without the U.S. as the linchpin, the backbone of NATO, Putin would be more adventurous. He would likely test the idea that NATO actually is viable. And this is the recipe for a larger war. And we know what large wars in Europe mean. We've been in two of those situations. Those are wars that drag us in. Trump would be the factor that catalyzes, that precipitates it. Whereas Harris, you could kind of nitpick and think that she's not been exactly where she needs to be. Maybe we've been a little bit slow in our support to Ukraine. But the comparison between the two is just, it couldn't be more stark. Harris is what's going to keep us out of a large war. Trump is what's going to be what drags us into a larger war.
We've only got about 3 minutes left. I want to talk about Schedule F and Project 2025 and what a second Trump term would look like. Alexander Vindman is our guest, retired Lieutenant Colonel with the U.S. Army. Sorry about that. And a Purple Heart recipient. Alexander, you'd mentioned Gordon Sondland, who was the ambassador to Ukraine at the time, and that he was a political hire. It was a friendly hire. He had no experience in this. Project 2025 would do nothing but fill up the government with a whole bunch of people who have nothing except loyalty to Donald Trump.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that you always have political hires. The president comes in, he's entitled to put in political hires in that political layer. What Schedule F does is it takes the professional class, a civil servant class. We're talking about 50, 60,000 career decades of service, whether it's the military, Department of Defense, State Department, all of the different government agencies. It would convert all those positions, not just that thin layer at the top of, you know, several thousand, but 60,000 into political people that he could fire and put in with loyalists. The only test would be whether they're politically loyal. It is disastrous. So this is actually a very, very close issue for my twin brother, who's the Democratic nominee for Virginia 7, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., with all of those public servants, retirees. It is extremely dangerous. Think about, I live in Florida now. The entities that cover weather effects, the EPA for environmental issues, everything would kind of be on the chop. Education, Department of Education would be on the chopping block. as institutions under Project 2025, and then Schedule F would take what remains and convert those at the senior level to political appointments positions. So it'd be very, very dangerous.
It is taking your least qualified, least accomplished cousin and putting them in a management position for which they have no qualifications. That's the way I look at it.
One qualification, loyalty, absolute blind loyalty to Donald Trump. So no checks and balances. So it's more dangerous than that cousin because he'd be in a position of authority and he would be very, very loyal to Donald Trump.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today. Thank you for your service to our country. We had a number of commenters on the live stream. Thank you so very much. Alexander Vindman, retired Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Army. Really appreciate your time. News is coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform Jabba the Musk Hates that we continue to call Twitter. Just a reminder that Maggie Dawn today from 2 to 4 p.m., she is going to be joined by Olivia Troy, a Republican and former National Security Advisor to George W. Bush, and she worked in the Trump administration. She was there during other natural disasters that occurred under the Trump administration. And she's going to be able to share with Maggie exactly how that went when areas that he felt did not vote for him requested disaster aid.
Yeah.
Make sure you join. It should be fantastic. Maggie Dawn Show today, 2 to 4 p.m., is going to be joined by Olivia Troy. We are joined today, as we are every other Thursday, by the Acme Packing Company sports guru. Paul Noonan is here. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing great.
Good, good, good.
How are you guys?
We're wonderful. Let's talk about, so Aaron Rodgers, what did he get? Did he get his coach fired? Did he just say, I don't like you, make him go away?
So he claims he didn't, but he probably did. And he also claimed he doesn't have as much power as people think he has. But of course, you know, Aaron says a lot of things.
He does.
And, Aaron's, until today, his offensive coordinator was his hand-picked former Packer offensive quarterbacks coach, Nathaniel Hackett. Alan Lazard is the Jets' leading receiver, former Packer receiver, who Aaron likes. You know, they had Randall Cobb last year. Aaron is in charge of that team for until his contract is up. And the Jets also are a very, very poorly run organization and have been basically since Super Bowl III.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah. Yeah.
They fired their head coach, Robert Saleh, when they returned from getting stomped by the Vikings in London. And it's just a weird, bad move all around that doesn't make logical sense, except for Aaron doing it. The reason for that is Robert Saleh is a defensive-minded head coach, and the Jets' defense is extremely good. It is no worse than the fifth-best defense in the NFL. You can make a good case it's third or second. The problem with the Jets is entirely on offense. It is entirely Aaron and Nathaniel Hackett's fault. And, you know, he's the highly paid star. They have made their bed with him. And, yeah, it looks like Aaron got a perfectly good, at least defensive coach, fired from his job. He'll be better off for not being on the Jets, though. So feel bad for Robert for the time being, but he will land somewhere better, possibly the 49ers, and then be good again. So all fine. But this is just Aaron. So glad he's gone.
Oh, and that's the thing is, I feel so good for the former coach. Now he doesn't have to deal with that.
Yeah,
it's just he's a whole bunch of disaster, in my opinion.
He is. What we've learned about Aaron more than anything since he's moved on is he is really unwilling to change his ways. And honestly, Matt LaFleur should get two additional Coach of the Year awards for the MVP seasons he got out of Aaron Rodgers. It was an incredible feat of managing a very difficult man to play football in a way he does not like playing to great effect. Just a fantastic job by the Packers there.
Calvin.
Yeah, well, I mean, Aaron Rodgers can say that he didn't have anything to do with it. It wasn't his role. But the cracks in the relationship between him and Saleh were evident even going back as far as May or June, whenever mandatory mini camps were that Aaron Rodgers missed.
Oh, he always did.
Yep. Yeah, there's was very clearly in Saleh's response to that. He was kind of, it seemed like he was put off that Rodgers wasn't there, and it seemed like Rodgers was put off that he was even being expected to be there. So there's definitely fractures forming already.
That's
absolutely.
No, go on, Paul. I'm sorry. Go.
Oh, and Aaron had a meeting with the team owner the night before Robert Saleh was dismissed. And so just everything suggests that Aaron was the cause here.
I understand you have to have a lot of self-confidence in a position of a professional quarterback. I understand that you need to have that, but his level of arrogance just keeps going up. I thought he plateaued, and it just is remarkable to me that even as he gets older, I just think he thinks higher and higher and higher of himself. That's kind of a gift.
Yeah, he thinks the best. He thinks he's the greatest. And to Calvin's point, one of the things Aaron has always struggled with is chemistry with young receivers. But he doesn't show up to any of the mini camps
to work
to get
with
on the same page as them.
Right.
And the Jets' best receiver is Garrett Wilson, who's now in his third year. The Jets' not best receiver is Alan Lazard. and Garrett Wilson gets a lot of targets, but there are all these little weird, little dinky things that don't do any good. Aaron's been doing this forever now, freezing out young guys, not doing the work to get on the same page with them, throwing to his buddies, coaching with his buddies. And it's just, I'm so glad we're rid of him and onto the love era. It feels so freeing.
Well, and that, I mean, honestly, like that's the baffling thing to me is like, you don't show up to camp or mini camps. You don't think you are needed.
He doesn't need it.
And I know that he plays football way better than me. I know he has way more Super Bowl rings than me, but you can count on one finger how great he is versus other players who are amazing because they work as a team because they know it's about teamwork. Like, your job as an older player, as an older anything, and anything you do is to look at the younger players and say, all right, let me help you. Help me. Break me from habits and whatnot. Are New Yorkers even excited that he's there? I should say Jets fans. Are they even excited that he's there?
I don't think they are anymore. If they were, I think that is really, really, really coming off at this point. Aaron shows himself pretty quickly. So
yeah,
doesn't take long.
Well, he did it for years and years, and then those last few years were like, oh, maybe he is a D-bag.
How are we feeling about the Packers going forward?
I think generally speaking, pretty well. They're not perfect. They've played some sloppy games and still gotten wins out of it. I think if they firm up a couple of things, that they'll start to turn into sort of the juggernauts they were at the end of last season. They're one of the best teams in the league at creating big plays. They've just had trouble kind of doing the small stuff in between, reliably picking up first downs. And part of that is caused by a few of their issues with receivers. The injury to Christian Watson, who is a good sort of middle to deep receiver, and Romeo Doubs, I think, is kind of the big one there, who was suspended for last week's game. What we seem to know is that he's unhappy with his role at the moment, which is a little weird because some speculation here. Romeo is not talking. He skipped media day yesterday. But it's a little weird because while Jaden Reed has, you know, been the breakout star this year for sure, and Dontavian Wicks is dropping everything that's thrown to him, Romeo Doubs is getting plenty of targets. He was the third most targeted receiver going into the last game that played against the Rams. And that was just barely, like, he was really close to being in the top two. So I'm not sure what his complaints really are, but they could use him because they've had trouble moving the sticks reliably without him. And he plays an important role in the offense that kind of nobody else does. Nobody else is good at contested catches, at sort of those over-the-middle tough catches. And so they need to get him back in the fold or find somebody else to do that. But that was a weird situation that popped up, and it's the second year in a row where they've had to suspend one of their better players for a week due to conduct detrimental to the team. Jair Alexander gets suspended last year when he made himself captain for a game, which was funsies. But that, generally speaking, though, they're in good shape. Their offense is fairly, very explosive. It just lacks a little bit of consistency. And on defense, they've got a couple of holes that they do need to work on. But Xavier McKinney has obviously been fantastic. And what I like best about the defense is their new coordinator, Jeff Hafley, has been very good at adjusting when their weaknesses get exposed. I think if Joe Barry was still in charge of this team, they would get no pressure. They get picked apart by everybody. But Hafley does not let that happen. When they can't get pressure, he blitzes, and he's very creative at doing so. And the Packers have created a lot of turnovers as a result. So they're in a good spot. They play not that great Arizona team this week. They can work on some of the issues that have plagued them. And, you know, what when they roll into the more difficult part of the season, which will kind of start with Houston in a couple weeks, hopefully they'll be rip-roaring ready to go.
The Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan is here to talk all things sports. He joins us every other Thursday. Paul, let's talk about that really angry former Brewer who hates Milwaukee. What is that?
Jesse Winker, I mean, the feeling is mutual. And I think well-earned by everybody. When we had Jesse Winker, it was just a bad situation. He was coming back from injury. He definitely wasn't all the way back yet, which is why we could afford him in the first place. And he was terrible. Like, his bat speed was way down. He was slow. He couldn't play in the field. And we let him go. Everybody let each other go at the end of the season. But a year removed from being injured, Jesse Winker's had a very good season for the Mets. His speed has returned against the Brewers in that stupid series we just played. He had a triple. He had a bunch of stolen bases. But I think he was looked at as one of the reasons two seasons ago the Brewers didn't really advance. And he got booed while he was out there struggling for them. He was on the playoff roster when he probably shouldn't have been. And it's no fun to get booed by your own fans. So he holds a grudge, and he made us pay. Good on Jesse Winker for that. So, I mean, honestly, this goes both ways, as it should. It's what sports is all about. So you should boo the enemies, and we are enemies. And I don't know if you guys saw, but Broken Bat Brewing is currently charging Jesse Winker's Brewers batting average per beer, $1.99.
Ooh, ouch.
Part of a promotion.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Like in New York, you wouldn't. If we were in New York right now, you wouldn't have had all that flowery language to describe Jesse. You'd be like, he sucked when he left. But Wisconsin, when we want to get spiteful and mean, we do it in a real fun, passive aggressive way. And also, I don't believe you should ever boo players on your own team unless they're egregiously bad. I stand for booing only one person. That is San Diego Padres Manny Machado. He will receive no forgiveness any time in my lifetime. It will be Manny Machado.
Better be Manny Machado.
He is the worst human being on earth, earning too much money, producing no rings for his club. He grabbed his groin in front of at the county stadium once, in front of everybody, because he loved it. He is a terrible person.
Yeah, he feeds on it too.
I think there could be a big. I think there's more room for more terrible people in sports. I just do. I think Aaron Rodgers, he's working his way up there.
Manny and Aaron take up like four or five people.
What's that, Paul?
This whole segment has just been about terrible people.
Well, someone who isn't terrible, Rafael Nadal, tennis legend of the French hard court, is retiring as of the end of the season.
So not a terrible person?
Not as terrible a person as I can see. He's very nice to people. Yep. Anytime he hits someone with a ball, he goes and hugs them.
Yes, as far as I know, a not terrible person, but you never know. But a big deal, and honestly, we're still in, I would say, a bit of a golden age of men's tennis. It's a very, very high quality game. But Nadal was kind of the kickoff for a resurgence after, yeah. I think, really a kind of a downslope in the tennis game, and him and Federer really brought it back with that, the rivalry in particular. So,
oh, yeah.
I feel like he's been around forever, and apparently he is because he's retired, but one of the all-time greats in the sport and Absolutely. Deserves all the plaudits he's getting.
Yeah, 22 Grand Slam wins. Yep. I mean, the king of the clay courts. I mean, that's...
King of the clay courts especially. Nobody yeah. played clay as well as Nadal.
Yeah.
And just going back to something that you said earlier about Aaron Rodgers having Super Bowl rings, as Calvin so succinctly pointed out, Greg, Aaron's got one more than you. So don't necessarily feel so bad.
But does Aaron Rodgers have the 1996 Best Senior Actor Award from CMH and Waukesha? No, he does not.
Paul Noonan joins us every other Thursday from the Acme Packing Company to talk all things sports. Thank you so much, Paul. We will see you in a couple. Stay with us. We're going to wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing today from the world of camping. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Vast and Global Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just another reminder coming up today on the Maggie Dawn Show. Should be great segment. Olivia Troy is going to join her. She's a Republican who worked during the Trump administration and saw firsthand what happened, for instance, when we had those wildfires in California, and California came to ask Donald Trump, then President Trump, for aid. Yeah. They actually had to pull out voter data from Orange County, California, to show Trump that there were as many Republican voters in that county in California than there were in Iowa. And then he agreed to give them aid for those wildfires. Is that what we want going forward? Or are we not going to we're not going to have any more natural disasters under Donald Trump because he'll be able to control the weather because apparently there's a machine that does that. It's just the Republicans weren't given the manual.
They wouldn't read it if they got it.
Well, he wouldn't read it.
They would have been
it.
Like, I don't need this. And they start bashing at it going, does it take my fingerprint?
So join Maggie today between 2 and 4 p.m. to hear that conversation with Olivia Troy. It should be very, very very interesting. It's 11:53. That means it is time for
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever have a thing you feel should not be, send it in to Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. I had somebody tag me on my personal Twitter page yesterday with a great This Shouldn't Be a Thing that we're going to use next week. But today, this kind of just jumped out at me from the Wisconsin State Journal. Gail Warland is the author. Here's the headline. Rock Island Camping closed after massive mice infestation at Wisconsin Park.
Gross.
The mice are so bad right now in Rock Island State Park, just off the northeastern tip of Door County, that the mice are reportedly chewing through campers' Crocs, shedding tent floors, and eating their way into Rubbermaid bins.
And you know what's funny is that on the live stream.
There's a live stream?
For us.
Oh, I thought you meant of the mice.
All right, Jane. Welcome back. We were talking about camping before. We were teasing this segment.
Yes.
And Mark from Prairie du Sac on the live stream said, with all with what's going on with the mice at Rock Island State Park, Mr. Jinx line, I hate you Mises to pieces. That's a very old reference. Ask your Mima or Peepaw about that.
But I hate Mises to pieces.
That's it's a thing.
And it should not be a thing. This massive infestation has prompted the DNR to close Rock Island State Park to camping for the rest of the season. You can still go tromp around from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily, but camping is not going to happen, so forget about camping there.
I don't want to go. No! There's no there's no version of this that makes me want to say, you know what, I'll take it on.
There's a Facebook group dedicated describing the deluge of mice as chaos. The Door County Shore Report also reported the infestation. Normally, raccoons are more of an issue, but now it's the Mises. The mouse population normally kept in check by snakes, water snakes, other predators. Experts think that climate factors may have been contributing to the mice boom because of last year's mild winter followed by a wet spring and very crowded conditions. But there's a quote in here that's just, when the sun sets, they come out.
This is going to be a movie. This is going to be like a Cocaine Bear. Like mice.
Crack mice.
Yeah, tent mice. What was it? What was it? Croc mices. I don't know. It's just, Calvin, you look like it looked like you wanted to.
Well, I guess I kind of had my question answered already, but I was like, where are all the owls and coyotes and all the things that eat these things? You'd think it would just be like a feast for them and it would be taken care of.
Well, DNR says it's going to take time for predators like snakes, birds of prey, and foxes to bring the mouse population back down. Park staff actively monitoring the situation. They'll continue that into next year. But if we continue to have these milder winters, I would think we're going to see more rodent populations.
Oh, no. This is climate change?
So if you had camping plans, unfortunately, and this would be a great time to go camping, really.
Oh, yeah.
It is so perfect right now.
The next 2-3 weekends, yeah.
Yeah, but the mice are so bad right now in Rock Island State Park off Door County. They have actually closed it to camping for the rest of the season, but you can still go for a hike from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. Wear good shoes. They apparently like to eat Crocs.
Steel toe everything on those shoes.
That is today's edition of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
And again, if you ever have a thing you feel should not be, make sure you send it in to Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us.
I feel like you have the perfect every time. If you have a thing that should not be, you should send it to Greg and me.
Oh,
thank you.
Nice.
Every time you say it, I'm like, just say it. Just do it.
You can do that too. All right. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers and everyone across Civic Media. Traffic, and the list is just too long to go into. Thank you. Without you guys, nothing works. Thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you get the chance to share it. News coming up next, followed by Todd Alba, noon to 2 p.m. And keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.